the next generation of radio. It's the MyMac.com podcast.
Hi, this is Tim Robertson, the publisher of MyMac.com, and you're listening to MyMac Mini podcast number 15. And actually, this is the last MyMac Mini podcast that you will hear. Oh no, what's going on with the MyMac Mini podcast? Well, don't worry, it's not really going away. In fact, we're going to have one more of the original podcast recorded this Thursday night coming up. And after that, we're going to have a little bit of a retooling of the MyMac.com podcasts in general. In essence, we're going back to one podcast. Now, the reasons for that is many and varied, and it's going to necessitate, if I can speak right, some changes. Number one, all the segments that you hear here on the mini podcast are going to move over to the main podcast, I guess, the only podcast after this week. And me, Chad, and Guy will still be on, except we won't be hosting the show. In fact, there really won't be a host. Or if there is, it'll be me. What we're going to do is we're going to combine all the different segments of all the podcasts into one show. We're going to shorten some of the segments. We're going to retool a few of the segments. For instance, John Nemirovsky is going to he's going to focus more on the publishing side of the Mac world, books and authors. It's been his strong point for a long time. He is the Mac book man, I tell you what. Even the publishers know it. And we really look forward to... not that there's anything wrong with this segment now. I just think that, and John agrees, that he really, his expertise is in books. So we're going to meet, through John, a lot of the authors of the great Mac books out there. Robert is going to continue his segments. Guy Searle is, of course, going to be continuing with Chad and I, and he's going to keep going with the Not Mac News, the comedy sketches, if you will. And hopefully, David Cohen will continue with Fenestration. I absolutely love Fenestration, and we'll probably kick off each podcast in the future with Fenestration, just like we usually do here on the Mini. I didn't kick off with it this week. Well, I'll get to that segment here when I get done yakking at you. So what will Guy and I and Chad do? that didn't come out sounding quite right, did it? Let me take a drink. My voice is getting a little froggy. Ribbit. Much better. Nothing like some caffeinated soft drink at 10:30 at night. Yeah, who needs sleep, right? So when Guy joins Chad and I, when he did join us for the main podcast... it was a lot of fun, but the problem really was that we didn't have a focus to the show. We did the Mac News, and sometimes we would have an interview and that sort of thing. But, you know, that show didn't really reflect what we do at MyMac.com. At MyMac, we have product reviews. Sometimes we have opinion pieces, especially on the blog side. We have tips and tutorials, and we basically provide a service that hopefully allows you to use your Mac better and find cool stuff for it, including your Mac and your iPod, and even using Windows on your Mac, or using your Mac in a Windows world, which is Fenestration. So we wanted to kind of focus a little bit more our segment on what makes the Mac great and some of the tools that you can use for your Mac. So... along with myself, Chad and Guy, are going to have one topic that we're going to speak about each week. It might be an interview. We might all download the same software, try it, and talk about that a little bit. It could be almost anything, really. But it's going to be a short segment. It's going to be no longer than 15 minutes. And only that long because there's three of us. Sometimes it'll be a lot shorter, but for the most part, it's going to range right around 15 minutes. So the entire podcast is going to get a little bit shorter. It's going to get a little bit more focused. And hopefully it's going to get a lot better. So sit back, relax, enjoy the very last MyMac Mini podcast. It was fun to put these together. and I really look forward to rolling out the new show. And we're going to do one more of the original podcast, like I said, this week, and kind of a farewell to that format. On this week's show, of course, everybody's joining in that's you're used to, and we're going to play the last part of the Guy, Tim, and Chad podcast that we recorded the night before our 100th podcast. I said I was going to get to that the last 2 weeks, and I didn't. And so we'll finish out the show this week with that. We'd really like to have your opinion on what we're going to be doing. Do you think this is a good idea? Do you think this is a bad idea? Simply send us some feedback at mymacpodcast@gmail.com or tim@mymac.com. I get both of those, so either one will work. Or you can simply call our telephone number and leave an audio feedback, 1-801-938-5559. Before we jump to fenestration, I wanted to say that last week, John Nemirovsky was talking about the Otterbox on Mini Podcast 14. He's got a blog post up there called Otterbox Kickboard or Powerbook Case. It's really funny. John took, well, he didn't actually put his laptop in this and went swimming, but he put some stuff in this Otterbox case and took a swimming with him for like a half hour in the pool. He's even got a picture of it. It's pretty funny. And of course, I asked, you know, why no Nemo in a Speedo picture? And as David Weeks actually said he was going to video it, and they decided it's probably that they better not. That would have been great. So, a lot of stuff happening up on the website. Hope you check it out. Got a lot of political discussions going on, especially with the Democrats taking over both the Senate and the House here in the United States. So there's a lot of discussion about that going on. And, of course, we've got some Maxpirations up there. David Week has a couple book reviews. Neil Monk's sent us a Make Internet Savvy Programs with Real Basic article. It's fantastic. If you're into Real Basic or at all or even interested in programming, it's definitely worth checking out. Getting back to the show, we've got Fenestration up first, and of course Fenestration's all about using your Mac in a Windows world. This podcast is sponsored by smalldog.com. Check them out if you're looking for iPod or Mac gear. And inotech.com, inno-tech.com, if you're looking for some great web hosting.
Hello, this is David Cohen, and I'm the London Bureau Chief for mymac.com. Welcome to Fenestration, my guide to using a Mac in a Windows world. Welcome to Fenestration number 15. Following on from my comments last week, I thought I'd spend a little bit of time talking about how you can turn the Windows firewall on and off. Now, why would you want to do this? Indeed, why would you be messing with a Windows machine and its firewall at all? Well, you may have Parallels running, which means you'll have the Windows XP firewall because it becomes a standard with Windows XP Service Pack 2. You might have that same firewall running under Windows XP Service Pack 2 under Boot Camp. Or if you don't have an Intel machine, you might have Virtual PC running. Again, if you've got XP Service Pack 2, then that firewall is turned on by default. Finally, you might be trying to interface your Mac to a network that's actually managed by a Windows machine. Or you might be trying to help somebody out who's got a Windows machine and a firewall router, and they want to try and get the thing working, and you're there with a Mac trying to get them sorted out. Now you might be thinking, okay, there's a Windows session either running on my Mac or running on somebody else's machine. We all know how insecure Windows is, so why would I want to turn off the firewall? Well, if you're behind a router, a NAT router, or a router as you Americans call them, then you're already protected from the internet far more effectively than the Windows firewall will protect you. You're not got a direct connection because you're using NAT, Network Address Translation, to talk to the internet. That's what the router does for you. Consequently, everything on the inside of your network is protected from the internet by the router. As far as the internet's concerned, your computer just isn't there. All it can see is the router itself, and the router is responsible for passing internet traffic to and from your network. Obviously, this applies if you're running Windows XP on a PC or a Mac in bootcamp mode. If you're running Parallels, you get an arrangement somewhat similar in that Parallels itself acts as a NAT router between your Parallels session and your Mac. Now, the Windows firewall protects you from traffic coming into your computer from outside on the internet or elsewhere on the network. And it's actually pretty good at doing that. What it doesn't do is actually catch traffic that you might not want coming from your computer going out to the internet. And typically that's what you would see if you were infected with some sort of Trojan or a keylogger or some other nasty bit of Windows malware that you didn't want running on your computer. Now, as I said, the Windows firewall can't pick that up. And really, that's one of the more useful things that a firewall can do for you, particularly if you're behind a NAT router. If you're behind a NAT and you're effectively pretty well shielded from the internet, then obviously what you really want to be sure is you've not inadvertently downloaded or installed a piece of malware that's actually going back out to the internet and using your computer to route spam or take over websites or launch denial of service attacks. The Windows firewall won't help you with protecting against these exploits. That is why if I'm trying to troubleshoot any sort of network connection on a Windows machine, the first thing I do is turn off the Windows firewall, and that's why I'm recommending something you might want to do as well. How you actually do it is pretty simple. What you need to do is go to the Windows Control Panel, click on the Security Center icon, and then click on the Windows Firewall button that you'll find at the bottom of the window that opens when you click on Security Center. You'll then get a tabbed dialog marked Windows Firewall. You'll be on the general pane, and on there there's two radio buttons, either on recommended or off not recommended. Click off not recommended and hit OK, and the Windows Firewall will be turned off. What I recommend you do before you actually come out of that dialog is actually click on the Advanced tab, and you'll see in there a list of network connections on your PC. Just untick all of the tick boxes for the Windows Firewall in that tab as well before you hit OK, and that really makes sure that it's not operating on any connection. What you'll then get is a balloon coming up down by the clock on the right-hand side of the machine saying your computer might be at risk, no firewall is turned on. So to get rid of that, go back into the Security Center, press the Recommendations button that's up by the red firewall box, and tick the box that says I have a firewall solution that I'll monitor myself, and it will stop nagging you that the firewall is not turned on. Now obviously given this recommendation I've just made to turn this firewall off, particularly if you're troubleshooting the machine, you want to think long and hard about whether you want to run any other firewall software on top of the Windows firewall. As I've said, the Windows firewall is pretty good for incoming traffic. It's not much good for outgoing traffic because it doesn't cover that at all. The problem with packages that do pick up outgoing traffic is they will flag up things all the time, and unless you're quite a techie computer user, you won't necessarily know when it flags something up, whether it's something you want to allow or not. I mean, certainly I'd recommend if you're running Parallels or Bootcamp on an Intel machine and you're behind a NAT router, then you might want to think about just leaving the Windows firewall off and avoid as much as possible using the internet from the Windows sessions. Obviously you've got your Mac Safari sessions for that, or Firefox, whatever you're running, but if you run internet connections under OS X, then you're considerably more secure from spyware and malware, which is the principal problem that Windows users face nowadays on the internet. If you are going to be running Windows to connect to the internet, then after you finish troubleshooting the connection, have a think about whether you want to turn that firewall back on, depending on how comfortable you feel about the configuration of the NAT router that you've got the machine sat behind. Now, I've offered this advice on turning the Windows firewall off in the context of getting a NAT router up and running, particularly for a user who's got a Windows machine connected to it. So, quick piece of advice about how to do that. Make sure when you configure the NAT router, they're often configured via a web interface, that you connect them using a cable, Ethernet cable, connected directly to the router, rather than trying to configure them over the wireless connection. Basically, what I recommend you do is get the thing working, connecting to the internet, allowing you to browse the internet via a cable first. Once you've got that working, then only then turn to the wireless section, start getting the wireless thing up and running. Particularly if you can use wireless encryption, if you don't do it that way around, then you can find yourself, if you're having problems, getting awfully confused. If it's not working, you won't know whether it's a problem with the router's internet connection or whether it's a problem with the wireless network. And having done this many times, let me tell you, it's just easier if you use a cable first, and once you're happy everything's up and running, then worry about getting the wireless network going. When you do come to configure the wireless network, again, keep it simple first. Get it going without any encryption running over the connection. Verify you can connect to the internet wirelessly and that on the reboot the machine reconnects to the router. Once you've got the basic wireless connection working properly, then you can worry about adding extra layers of security on using wireless encryption or hiding the router ID or whatever you're going to do. Finally, bear in mind what I said to you last week. If a Windows user comes to you as a Mac user and says, I'm having trouble getting this router working, can you come around and help me? Just prepare yourself from the fact that it's not as simple and easy to set up as setting up Mac OS X equipment and software. If you are going to be looking in on the Windows side, I would definitely recommend if you have the funds and the opportunity, the right equipment, to get a copy of Windows XP going on a Mac or another machine and try things out and make sure you understand how it's all going to work before you actually go around to do the piece of work and try and get the thing working. You can save yourself a lot of time with a bit of preparation. That's going to do it for this session. As always, questions or comments to davidcohen@mymac.com. Until the next time.
We're heading back to the sagging shelf section of the Book Bites bin here on the MyMac.com mini podcast number 15. And John Nemo is joining you again for some book reviews on our All Over the Mac segment. Each of the three titles has been distributed, but not necessarily published, by Wiley, W-I-L-E-Y, one of the major book publishers of the world, and they've been a strong supporter of Macintosh and of digital photography since the very beginning. First title is called Shooting Digital, Second Edition. The publisher is Cybex, and the author is Mikkel Aland. I'll have all the show notes with the ISBN and the prices and the websites for each of these particular books posted on our website. This book costs $40 in the U.S., $48 in Canada, and £26 in the U.K. It is 287 pages. It's fairly large format. It's in beautiful color, has lots of notes, tips, sidebars, and helpful practical information. The best thing about this book, Shooting Digital Second Edition, it's about becoming a better photographer. Hallelujah! There's only a tiny bit about histograms. There's a fairly substantial section on RAW and on using your computer with your camera with a digital SLR. But the most important part of the information, which is the part you can get better here than many other books and websites, is an excellent step-by-step instructions with fine illustrations, good writing, very good itemized steps on how to become a darn good photographer. Capturing the decisive moment, photographing pets, group portraits, going on vacation, photographing your personal belongings, accessories, sending your stuff, your pictures on email. MyMac.com has been friendly personally with Mikkel Aland for quite a while, and we like working with him very much because he likes working with us because we give his books good reviews. The reason we give his books good reviews is they're well written, they're well illustrated, and I think we're going to give this book a 4.5 out of 5. I'm not sure how we could improve it, but there's always room for improvement. And this is one book that you're going to want to get. It's well worth the cost, and the information is stuff you can get elsewhere, but you can't get as much good information with fine illustrations and hints and tips and practical nuggets. Accessories that make a difference. Batteries, everything you need to know about your batteries. He's been to the edge of the world and back, and you get the benefit of the information. So we're going to give Mikkel and Shooting Digital Second Edition, from Cybex, a very strong 4.5 out of 5, and we're going to use this for our personal learning and also in my work as a digital photography tutor. The second title is called Outdoor Photographer, Landscape and Nature Photography with Photoshop CS2 by Rob Shepard. This is published by Wiley, and the cost is $35 US, $45 Canadian, 23 pounds United Kingdom. The page count is 379, and this book is loaded with screenshots and illustrations. What this book does is it picks up where the other one leaves off. The major emphasis, obviously, is in outdoor and nature photography, but it's almost all having to do with what you need to know in your home digital darkroom about how to take what you have photographed and then use Photoshop specifically to make your pictures look the most exciting. I mean, all the stuff, layers and layers and more layers, oh my goodness, special techniques using Photoshop, curves, and how to manage color and how to work with RAW, extending the tonal range of scenes. But the extraordinary thing about this outdoor photographer, landscape and nature photography with Photoshop CS2, is just the high quality production values. Just page after page of screenshots and before and after color illustrations and just examples of how it's going to look on your computer, how your pictures are going to look on your computer, not just using their examples. And of course, the big emphasis is on Camera Raw, but you do not have to be using Camera Raw to understand what Rob Shepard is teaching you in this title. Well, I think if you're going to be using Photoshop CS2 to do landscape and nature photography, I think we've hit another home run here. Debris removal. Figure 11-1 shows a scene shot shortly after sunrise in the foothills of the eastern Sierra Nevada mountains. The light is nice. The photo has adjusted well, but there's two problems that I was aware of. The cable around the boulder and the power pole in the background. So he talks about how to actually make the picture look like it feels, not how it actually was on the scene. Talks to you about the clone stamp, which is one of my personal favorites. I think 4.5 out of 5 is appropriate for this book also. So congratulations to Wiley and Cybex for two fine books, for the first 2 out of 3 we're reviewing here on All Over the Mac and MyMac.com mini podcast number 15. Third and final title is a small square book called 40 Digital SLR Techniques. It's only $17 US, 22 Canadian, and only 10 pounds in the UK. The page count is 240, and the author is Daryl Tan, and co-author is Yu Lee, E-U-L-E-E. The actual publisher is Young Jin, Singapore, but again, Wiley is the distributor. So MyMac.com congratulates Wiley Publisher, a gigantic publisher, for teaming up with Young Jin in Singapore and Cybex. Let's see, how can we describe this little book? The contents are broken up into 7 major chapters, and each chapter has, you know, 6 or 7 or 5 different topics for a total of 40, which is why it's called 40 Digital SLR Techniques. And I'll just read the different primary chapters: basic camera body functions, extendable features and techniques like lenses, photographing people and sports, then still life, nature, landscape, chapter 5, storing and sharing, chapter 6, the obligatory maximizing your raw potential, oh boy, and chapter 7, editing in Adobe Photoshop CS2. So this book is not primarily if you want to spend all your time in the digital darkroom. This is to help you become a better photographer. What do you know? Just like the first one we talked about from Mikkel. And let's see, the pages are small, but the type is bold. The writing is very concise. The screenshots and the photographs are, you know, totally appropriate, but is it any good? I have used this 40 such and such techniques in my personal teaching, and one of the reasons I like it is because the lessons are focused and directed. They don't go on and on at length. They make their point, they get in, they get out, and you get the message. Do you understand about ISO? Do you understand about storing your pictures on external hard disks? What do you need to know for shooting in sunlight, whether you're using flash or natural light or flash on or off the camera? Should your prime lenses and your secondary lenses be? The lessons are concise. I like this book too, and the pricing is terrific. I think 4 out of 5 would be fair for a strong recommendation. Not quite as good as Shooting Digital, the first one we reviewed, but definitely if you want a small book for a very small price that has excellent, straightforward information and on a multitude of practical topics, 40 Digital SLR Techniques is one to consider. Okay, so thank you so much for listening to our segment this week. We appreciate it, and I do have an update on our contest from last week. We were giving away cases from case-mate.net for the 30, 60, and 80 gig iPod, and we did not have any entries. I know, must be, people must not like what we have to give away for free. I've never heard of such a ridiculous thing. So if you did not enter for any reason, or you didn't hear about it, listen to the segment of last week's MyMac.com mini podcast number 14. And my segment starts about 6 minutes into the show and runs for 8 or 9 minutes, following the brilliant David Cohen and before the equally brilliant Robert Haselrig and Mr. Not Mac Searle. And you can learn about our contest. And thank you so much for listening to our MyMac.com mini podcast. John Nemo signing off until next week. And I'm going to go right back into those bookshelves and find some more books to give you ideas for holiday shopping and to improve your digital photography and your Macintosh skills. Talk to you soon.
Hello, everyone. Robert Haselrig here again with another speedy review. This week, I'd like to talk to you about some new iPod cases. First up is a couple of new cases for the second generation Nano. If you haven't heard of a company called Marware, you might want to check this out. These aren't your typical neoprene cases, nor are they the hard plastic ones that I don't particularly care for. These are made out of a different type of material. It's almost like a wetsuit type of material. If you've ever been surfing surfing in the cold weather, that is, or scuba diving, you would be familiar with this type of material. I'm not exactly sure what it's made out of, but I do like it. It's stretchy. And even if you don't have a new Nano, I'm pretty sure that these would fit the old Nano as well. I'm lucky enough to have a number of these cases to test out. Marware sent a whole bunch to us for our trial. And so what that means is I have a number of different options to tell you about. The basic model is called the Sport Suit Basic, and it comes with a belt clip and the protective case, as I was describing earlier, made out of this wetsuit type material. It comes in a bunch of colors. They sent me the black one, which I like particularly. And as far as cases go, this has been one of my favorites to test out. You don't have to take the iPod out of the case to stick it into a dock or a cradle. It has a little flap that allows you to access that compartment, and it also has a hole for where you can stick in your headphone jack. The thing that I like about it more than I like the typical neoprene cases is it's much thinner, and it has a nice texture that doesn't slip out of your hands. The other thing I really liked about it is the clip on the back is extremely sturdy. Some of the others in the neoprene cases, they tend to break off, fall off, and, you know, they're pretty cheap. This is not one of those cheap clips. The other thing I liked about it is because of the material it's made out of, it's not something I'd go diving with, but you could definitely take the Nano out in the rain and not really have to worry about it too much. Now, of course, I wouldn't go dropping it in a puddle or anything, but I wouldn't think twice about wearing it out when it's just misty or drizzling outside. So from there, to step up to the next level of Marware cases, they have another sport suit, and it's called the Sport Suit Relay. Now, this is the same type of material with a built-in armband on it, so you can wear it around your arm, which is nice if that's what you need out of a case. I don't need that out of a case, or at least I would like the option that if I wanted to wear it on my belt clip or wear it around my armband, I would prefer that, and I'll talk more about that in a minute. The thing I like about the sportswear sports suit relay is that it actually comes with a little pouch. So if you are a Nike Plus Nano user and you don't have any Nike shoes, you can use this little pouch and put the Nike shoe adapter in this little pouch, tie it on top of your shoelaces, and guess what? It works. So you don't need to go out and spend $125 on those Nike shoes. I wasn't particularly fond of the armband on this. It comes with some extensions, and for me to get it on my arm was a little bit of a hassle. It's not the worst thing in the world. It will work for most people. I'm just a little uncoordinated and had a little difficulty getting it on and off. Okay, so from there, the next step up from Marware is the Sport Suit Convertible. Now, out of all the ones that they sent, this one is the one that I have used the most because it does exactly what I said a second ago, and that is if you want to use the belt clip, you can use the belt clip. If you want to use the armband, you can use the armband. It has all that functionality built into it. It also has a hand strap, and it has one additional feature that doesn't come with the others, and that is this removable lid. It's a hard shell protector. So if you run in the woods and you're getting a lot of slaps in the arm from the trees that you're passing by, this little lid will protect your case even more. It'll protect your case that protects your iPod. So I guess that makes it a case. So those are the cases from Marware, and that is marware.com. So let's say you got a Gen 2 Nano, and you don't like this stuff from Marware. I don't know why you wouldn't, but let's say you don't. And you need the armband. Well, there's another company out there called Gizmac, and they make accessories for the Nano as well. And what they have out there is something called Titan Gear. Now, Titan Gear is not a case, but it is a clip that you can put around the better part of the back part of your Nano, and then you can take that clip and attach that clip to a bunch of other devices that they sell you, such as an armband or a rotating clip or a lanyard. This I wasn't particularly fond of. It wasn't that it wasn't made all that sturdy. It seemed to work well. I did have the iPod initially slip out of the clip. The thing I didn't like about it is it left the Nano exposed all the time because it's not a case. And I don't really like that, especially on the armband part of it. You know, if I'm running and I got the iPod exposed all the time, it's just not a good thing. You can learn more about Titan Gear from gizmac.com. That's GIZMACCOM. Finally, I've got one more case to tell you about, but it's not for your Nano. It's for your 60 or 80 gig video iPod. Yes, it's another neoprene case, and it's not a particularly good one. It's a little slippery, and I didn't like it that much, except for one thing. It looks like the devil. It's got little devil horns, it wears a silver earring, and it has a devil tail. The thing I didn't like about it is the neoprene case was really slippery. Marware makes one that is got a little texture to it, My favorite neoprene case is the iSkin, which I did a review on a few months back. This one I just wanted to mention because of its unique design. It's called the Podstar, and the model I have is the Diablo. And you can see pictures of this at thepodstar.com. That's it for me this week. This has been Robert Hazelrigg with a Speedy Review. Thanks for listening.
Good evening. This is Not Mac News. I'm your host, Guy Searle, bringing you unverifiable information with a smile. Send your thoughts, comments, threats, lawsuits to notmacnews@gmail.com. Dateline, Cupertino, California. Apple's latest input device offering, the Bluetooth Mighty Mouse, is only the first in line for the company's new wireless products. Apple is said to be working on new input strategies that are not only wireless, but don't require a physical product at all. Information will be entered via mental telepathy and will require surgery to place a large input-output probe in the base of the skull of all potential users. The user will interface with their Macintosh computer just by thinking about their next command, which program they want to open, and what internet sites they wish to go to. Repeated commands will be stored in a database held within the computer and reviewed by a special team at Apple for further development of this new product. Not Mac News asked about privacy issues and was assured by Apple that the default of sending all this information to the company can easily be changed by going to the preference file for the interface, clicking the opt-out box, and then punching themselves in the nose. There has been some technical problems with the new interface. Apparently, after one of the testers went to a website that featured pornography, he declared his undying love for Jenna Jameson and then proceeded to pester everyone until they agreed to purchase herbal Viagra. Two other issues with the interface have been that system freezes could possibly stop your heart, and that updating the drivers for the skull-based probe via software update had a tendency to wipe out the user's childhood memories. Apple had no comment on the rumor posted at SeekThinkRit.com that a kernel panic would cause the user's head to explode. Not Mac News. The best way to start your day outside of electroshock therapy. I'm Guy Searle, and I wish you a good day.
Every generation has their boogeyman.
Right.
Yeah. You know, back in the 50s, Grand which is Theft before Auto my time, thank you.
Grand Theft Auto is the boogeyman right now.
Yeah.
At least according to Hillary Clinton earlier
this, you know, like 2000, or whatever it was.
Oh, no. Hot coffee was the big story of
last year. Was
it
last year?
It was a mod for Grand Theft Auto that showed sex.
Yeah. In the 50s, it was comic books.
Right.
Mm-hmm. You know, and then they went way overboard.
Yep.
And overcompensated.
Yep.
And in the 60s, it was rock and roll music.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in the 70s...
it was drugs.
I don't know.
And it stayed there since then.
No, I know what, it was disco. And we're still running from it.
Please, God, kill it now.
Who is it, dear?
Oh, it's the Bee Gees. Oh, my God, run! It's the Bee Gees! Disco Shark.
Oh my God!
Yeah, Disco Shark.
Oh, come on in.
It's the Pointer Sisters. Run. So the 80s was Dungeons and Dragons.
Yeah.
Yep.
The 90s was
comic books again.
Rap music.
Yeah. No, you're probably right. It was rap music.
It was music. Yeah.
N.W.A. and
Eminem.
Run D.M.C.
Well, he wasn't 90s. He's now.
Well, he started out back then.
But you, if you're looking at.
But you're right. NWA
was
Two Live Crew.
Yeah,
Run DMC.
Cop Killer.
Yeah,
I mean that was it. Well, that was NWA.
Ice Cop Cube.
Yeah. No, that was Ice Cube.
Yeah,
Cop Killer. So there's always something that
they hold up as a standard of being evil,
right? And in hindsight, you look back and
you laugh
and you laugh because mm-hmm. Cop Killer is a song. If you listen to it now, it's still a pretty violent message, but it's almost quaint. Because you listen to rap music now, you know, what kills me is
rap music.
Rap music is, yeah. But it's not rap music. It's all, who controls rap music nowadays? A bunch of fat white guys.
Yeah.
And who listens to rap music more than anybody else? Suburban white kids. So it's not a thing of the people, and you know, how it was when it started out on, quote unquote, the streets.
Yeah, ghetto.
I remember when...
It's not ghetto.
I remember when rap music started, it wasn't about degrading women or any of that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
It was simply a new type of
message. Music. Way to get your message out.
Right. You listen to Grandmaster Flash,
mm-hmm.
Run DMC... That was cool. It was different. There was nothing like it before.
Mm-hmm. But you, well, you know, if you want to go way back, you could talk about Parliament Funkadelic.
There you go.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Was that the name of the other group? Parliament?
George Clinton and the Funky Parliament.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, George Clinton.
I saw them live when I was in Indy, probably about 2 years ago.
Well, I saw...
one of the best concerts I ever went to.
Since we're going in this direction, I saw this group in the late 70s. It's called Mother's Finest, and it was a black rock and roll group, except mm-hmm. for the drummer and the lead guitarist. Everybody else in the group was black.
Yeah,
and they were fantastic. And you know, South Florida, as far as music goes, was never exactly, you know, if it wasn't top 40, you didn't typically hear it on the radio.
Yeah, there was no real music scene.
No, well, I mean, like you had, there were certain stations in the country that were pushing the envelope. You
sure.
had, like, WMMS in Cleveland.
Yep.
They were real big. And there was a station in Detroit.
Detroit, yep.
That was really big.
Yep. We used to pick them up late at night only, pretty much. I couldn't get them during the day, but late at night, say after 9 o'clock, you can get it in. Can't remember the call letters now, but I remember they were playing stuff you wouldn't hear anywhere else.
No.
I mean, not even college radio was playing this stuff.
Right.
Unfortunately, that's gone. That now...
It's all corporate.
Well, that now is podcasting.
Yeah.
Podcasting has taken the place of progressive music.
Or progressive radio.
Yeah. Exactly. You're right. Because what we're doing right now that people have downloaded and are listening on, you know, Mini Podcast 12 or whatever happens to be on.
Where are we at now?
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
Almost an hour and a half. Nobody would put this on the air.
Not if they were smart.
No. Because how do you market this?
Mm-hmm.
Who do you market it to?
What's the demographic?
Yeah.
For this.
Middle-aged white guys that like to talk about computers.
Right, yeah.
That's, I'm going to throw out a real quick question. Something I want you guys' opinion on.
That's a big demographic, by the way.
Yeah. Do you think, do you think podcasting took over the spot that XM Radio thought it was going to fill?
Oh, absolutely.
Well, you know, I was thinking about this the other day, and I'm glad you brought that up.
I would say taking over. It hasn't taken over
yet. Not yet.
Not yet.
But you look at the numbers for commercial radio. They're all going down.
Mm-hmm.
AM radio, FM radio, satellite radio. You know, they had all these grand ideas. And 10 years ago, it was a great idea.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Now, with iPods or, you know, the digital audio player of your choice, you get to choose what content you want to listen to.
Right.
You
don't have to listen to.
And,
right.
You know, and they were the cause of their own demise by these huge corporate entities going out and buying multiple stations in all these different
markets.
Well,
what killed them is deregulation.
Yeah.
Because they opened it up for the big corporations to come in and own everything.
And they make them all sound the same.
Well, if you're in St. Louis or if you're in San Francisco, you're still hearing
the same
Amos
crap.
And Andy. Mm-hmm. You're still hearing Bob and Tom in the morning. It's all the same. You might have one guy sitting in the booth reading the weather, the traffic report, and the local mm-hmm. news,
yep.
and that's it. For me, FM, we had Q106,
mm-hmm.
and they had a guy named Tim Barron on. He wasn't the likeliest person that you would think as a big radio guy. But in this area, he was big because he was different. He was a mm-hmm. rock guy.
Right,
yeah.
His idea of good music was usually my idea of good music. And he would play stuff that nobody else, and he would give his opinion on the local, what's going on. This politician's a piece of crap, and here's why.
Right.
And he wasn't scared mm-hmm. of saying that stuff in the morning, and I listened religiously.
And that's why Howard Stern got so big.
Yeah.
You know, mm-hmm. Howard Stern was, you know, I mean, he was just a local guy until he hit D.C.
Right.
On D.C. 101, mm-hmm. and, you know, he kind of caused his own downfall there. You know, he says he quit. The D.C. 101 says there was a plane crash, an Air Florida plane crash that hit the 14th Street Bridge
right.
one mm-hmm. winter. And he as rumor has it, he called Air Florida and asked them how much a ticket was to the 14th Street Bridge. Yeah, you know, and yeah, you'd think that people could have a sense of humor about it, but like with anything else, there are people out there, and I'm sure maybe some of the people actually listening to this podcast, that are looking to be offended. They
we can guarantee you that they are listening to this show, because we've ran across problems which we talked about
offline
earlier with a certain bat story.
Yeah.
So
no, let's not go there.
Yeah.
No.
But here's the thing. As wild and crazy as Howard Stern was while he was on FM.
Right.
And he may still be that way on satellite.
I don't know.
He's probably even more so on satellite.
But he is tame compared to what you can do on a podcast.
Yeah, because you can do whatever the hell.
Because there are no bosses. Mm-hmm. Because as much freedom as he has at XM, or is he on Sirius?
Yeah, Sirius.
As much as freedom as they give him, he still has people to answer to.
Yep.
He still has corporate sponsors who's going to pay for it. He's still being paid millions of dollars to do his thing.
A lot of money.
In the podcasting realm, there's none of that. Thus, we have more freedom.
Yeah, there's no sponsors. There's no money.
Yeah, and there's
we
only
do it out of love.
And there's only cost. The cost being how much it costs to serve this information out there.
Right. But at the same time, compared to 10 years ago, the cost is minimum.
Oh, absolutely.
To get into broadcast.
And it's only going to go down.
Yep.
And it's not just podcasting anymore. It's going to be video. Mm-hmm. When you can make a video at home,
put it on YouTube.
But the problem there is there's no, again, just like podcasting, there's no revenue stream.
Not yet.
And when you post it up at YouTube, you potentially lose the rights to it.
You do lose the rights to it.
Exactly. They can rebroadcast it or whatever they want to do with it. Because you give them that license.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but by accepting that
exactly.
That agreement.
That's my fear with podcasting. When you join a network, that you become
dependent upon
their infrastructure to produce your show.
Yep.
Whether it's simply hosting it, or producing content for your show, or selling advertising for your show. That you become dependent upon that network. And then they decide, you know what, we need to make more money. And the way to do that is to put this ad in. Well, that's an ad that doesn't really go with my show. I mean,
you're
broadcasting Sun Microsystems computer, and we're a podcast about Mac computers. Well,
What's your point?
Or they want you to stop ragging on Microsoft, because Microsoft is now a big sponsor. So, you hear my voice go up right there.
You're talking about Nintendo.
Yeah. Went back to Nintendo. We are in a unique position in that we're not beholden to anyone. That we post and host our own podcast.
With our own content.
We own our own content. We own the site name. We do what we want to do. When we have an advertiser on the site who doesn't like what we're doing,
they're welcome.
They only have one person to go to complain, and that's me.
Right. Yep.
And
as much as the department is closed.
Yeah. And as much as I like money, and I like money, don't get me wrong, these Macs aren't cheap. Mm-hmm. As much as I like money, when it comes to my content, and I don't mean mine, I mean our content at mymac.com.
Whether it's the podcast
or an article, or a blog post or what have you.
Yeah, we talked about this.
Yep. It's my decision whether that gets edited or taken off. And I can guarantee you, no advertiser is ever going to tell me you need to take that down. No, what I need to take down is your advertising. The advertising will go before the content will go. Mm-hmm. Because the only thing we have is content. And when you let somebody else dictate what you can and cannot do with your content,
then you no longer have control.
You're done. It's over. And then you become
the man.
Yeah, pretty much. You know, there's a lot of really good blogs out there and blog networks where you get this kind of sarcastic writing that seems to be really popular now. Mm-hmm. This little smarmy,
right.
I'm a little tech geek boy and I'm cool because of it type of posts that were all bought up by, you know, AOL or MSN or whoever happens to own them now. And you see a change. they're not as cutting edge as they used to be. They try to pretend they are, or they'll try to be cutting edge against something else, not what they originally used to rally against. And it's all because of they gave up the right to produce the content that they want to in exchange for money. And I can understand that to a certain degree. I've got kids. I'd love them all to go to college. I'm never going to be rich because of MyMac.com. Never going to happen. But I've been doing it now for almost 12 years, and I've accepted that I'm probably never going to do it full-time and make... That's probably not true. The reason I haven't been able to take what I say to the next level, MyMac.com, is because I've never been able to focus on it as a job.
Right.
You know, the last 3 years, yeah, I've been a stay-at-home dad, and I've been able to focus more on it. But you can't when you have a little baby in the house. And now a three-year-old.
Right.
You just can't. If I had 4 to 5 hours uninterrupted...
A day.
For MyMac.com, it would be a totally different site. It'd be bigger, better, it'd be awesome. But we'd still retain that creative freedom. And every single one of the writers would enjoy a sense of creative freedom that I don't think you're going to find at hardly any other site. And I can say that confidently.
Well, no, you're right. Because I can't think of a single instance on the blog side where there's been any edit at all.
There's been a few times that I've deleted a post when the comments, because of that post...
has gotten out of control.
Civility was lost. And it was probably just best just to do away with it. And I have banned certain users in the past as well. We mentioned one earlier. We actually swiped his IP address and blocked it. So when he came to our site from that IP address, it said, "Hi, blank, we don't want you here, go away." We thought was kind of funny and cute. And David Avery actually set it up to do that. But if there's one thing I'm very passionate about, it's creative freedom and freedom of expression and free speech. Now, obviously, free speech doesn't apply to running into a theater
and screaming fire.
Right.
But it does apply to this product sucks. Mm-hmm. Apple's making a big mistake because of this. Microsoft is a monopoly because of this. Mm-hmm. The iPod is the greatest product because of this.
Well, for example, when they came out with the 24-inch iMac, I think we can all agree that it's an amazing product.
Absolutely. Right? And after seeing it in person today...
It's even more amazing.
It's like, my God.
But is it $2,000 worth of amazing?
I would say, yeah. When you figure, how much is a 23-inch... cinema display, $1,300.
Yeah, but you can get it. You can get a 23 or 24 inch monitor from, say, some other company.
Yeah,
that
is be a lot cheaper.
Would be a lot cheaper.
Right, but you're not just getting a monitor. You're getting a full blown, very powerful Core 2 Duo Macintosh in exchange.
But at the same time, for $500 more, or actually for $100 more.
Yeah.
You can step up to the Mac Pro with
but for the average
two
user,
gigahertz. They're not even Core Duo 2s. They're the Memrons, I think.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, you've got
Xeon.
Two basic Xeon server chips.
But for the average person, the non-recording huge podcast or video project Mac user, where are they gonna see the biggest bang for their buck? I think if they've already got a 20-inch monitor and they go with the Mac Pro, they'll probably see a bigger bang for their buck. But there's a huge difference between a 20-inch, 3-year-old 20-inch flat panel display and the new 24-inch.
Yeah.
That thing is so bright, so brilliant. That machine has so much power, and there's literally almost nothing you can't do with that machine. Mm-hmm. You can do every video project in the world on that iMac. It may not be as fast as doing it as on the Mac Pro, but for the average person, it's more than enough. And it's more than what they have right now. That's so true. I say for $2,000, absolutely. Especially when you go back and look at what you could have bought with that money 2 years ago, 6 years ago, 10 years ago.
But when you talk about computers, you know, it becomes difficult to talk about speed and power as compared to the past, because that's
it's starting to level out.
Well, that's not so much it's starting to level out, but it's a level that constantly changes.
But look at it this way also. For $2,000, and I would challenge anyone to go up to Dell.com and put a system that has a 24-inch monitor, the same specs as the iMac.
Core 2 Duo, yep, 2.13.
With a gigabyte of RAM.
2.16.
And then add in the value of the iLife suite. Video editing, audio editing, you know.
Making web pages.
iWeb. Yeah, right. Exactly. You can't do it. You just can't do it. Well, that's going to wrap up this extra long Breaking It Up Into Segments podcast. We're going to stop recording. And thanks for coming out of Grand Rapids, Guy.
Oh, I am having a great time.
Thanks for downloading the MyMac.com podcast. You can subscribe to this podcast at our RSS feed at MyMac.com or by visiting the iTunes Music Store's podcast section. Please send all feedback to MyMacPodcast@gmail.com. And thanks for listening to the MyMac.com podcast.